Hey, what's going on, everybody? It is Sunday night, August 6th, 2023. This is your WWE SummerSlam 2023 recap, review, aftermath, whatever you want to call it. But we got a lot of stuff to get into. I am Don Tony, and he is
Kev Castle. What's up, TT? What's up, everybody?
Not much. I tell you, Kev, I said this. I just finished doing a sit-down episode about 15 minutes before we went live, and I made this claim, and it got an interesting response. I don't know how you feel about it. I called SummerSlam for 2023 the best SummerSlam in history, and the only reason why I say that is because were there better matches in history? Absolutely. Were there more memorable matches in history? Absolutely. But as far as eight matches, you get two or three top quality matches, you pretty much consider it a successful pay-per-view. I honestly felt we had six bangers yesterday. Not five-star matches, you know, as far as the Meltzer scale goes, but from top to bottom, I thought this was a really solid SummerSlam.
It's funny that you say that because last night, and then I just stopped tweeting. Today I didn't tweet anything about it because I know I was doing the show tonight. But even last night, after upon a second watch of SummerSlam today, I rewatched it. Because I was, in fairness, and I'm glad we didn't do it last night. Again, not only to break up the monotony of everybody doing it last night, and we always kind of do our own thing anyway. And so I was much more happy to do it tonight, take a full day, take a step back. And then, because sometimes your first reaction of stuff is not always your right reaction, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so I got to watch it more uninterrupted today. Last night, phone was ringing, texts were coming in, emails were coming in. And today, just unfeathered, watched it full. I liked that a lot more on the second watch than I did on the first.
Okay.
And I'll just say that last night, you know, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but last night I was kind of 50-50 on it. Now, what you're saying rings a little bit more true to me. It was better than I initially thought it was. I don't know why. I guess maybe because I was a little distracted. Last night, again, took a phone call, came back, sat down. Oh, what just happened? What did I miss? You know, that kind of thing. So, and then the main event, which we'll talk about, like I said, I don't want to skip too far. I want to go chronological order like we normally do things. Was the crowd was taking me out of it a little bit with the silence pause.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and we'll talk about that. That's why on the second watch, I was able to say, you know, if I'm judging by the matches, forget the crowd. You're right. Six out of eight. You're pretty on point there. I think I might go five out of eight, but we'll talk about it. It's better than I thought it was on the second watch.
Okay. What was your favorite match and least favorite match of the card? I have a feeling we're going to agree about our least favorite match of the card, but my favorite match of the card, this actually got a little bit of mixed messages as well. What was your favorite and least favorite of the night?
Cody versus Brock was my favorite, believe it or not. I was so happy they had a great third match. That was my favorite.
Bravo.
That was my favorite match. And that what Brock did at the end, I loved it. Like I said, I watched mostly for that, but then I ended up watching the whole card because I really do believe I missed some spots while I was taking phone calls last night. So I'm going to go with that as my favorite match. And my least favorite match, that's a tough one. And I'm sorry, ladies. I got to put it on the ladies. And one that I was looking forward to, DT, if we go back, I have to almost like double talk because I was looking forward to it. And then, on paper, it was good. And then the pull off wasn't so good. It was Ronda and Shayna Baszler. It was painful to watch that. Even on the second go around, it was painful to watch. They both deserve better. I hate using that terminology because they deserve better. I'm not going to hashtag it, but Shayna gained nothing from that. And Ronda, if that's our final bow, not good. not good. Was that your least favorite, Anthony?
I said bravo because I'm absolutely the same with you. My favorite match was Cody and Brock. My least favorite was Ronda and Shayna. And I'll say this. We'll talk about Ronda and Shayna, to start off. I elaborated on this earlier, and I think I realized something last night that is so common sense that I think you'll agree, and I think every single person out there is going to agree as well. When we had the fight pits in the past with Steve Blackman and Owen Hart, and I can't remember the others, you know, it was a scripted match. And what I realized last night, now, yes, Shayna Baszler apparently suffered a legitimate arm injury, and that killed a lot of momentum they were trying to get. But something made me realize something last night. When we watch pro wrestling, when you watch Seth Rollins hit moves on Finn Balor and vice versa, when you watch AEW, when you watch kicks to the head, when you see all these shots, I'm sorry, Ronda Rousey hitting a knee to Shayna's head, even though it hurt, and you could play it in slow-mo. Wrestling is so exaggerated with offense that they do, that when you legitimately hit someone, unless you totally dismember them, it's going to look kind of boring. And the women yesterday tried, but kneeing someone in the face, when you're watching nonstop action from Logan Paul to Ricochet to all these others, getting a high knee to a face, even though it connected, is kind of, it's almost like when you're watching like a whole boatload of hardcore porn and then you put on Cinemax late at night. Like, it feels like extremely watered down. So I realize you cannot do MMA matches in WWE unless you're going to go full-blown legit. Obviously, this was held back yesterday, very watered down. If either one of those women would have been in the octagon and pulled those leg locks and everything, they would have been eaten alive in 30 seconds. Yeah. I was looking forward to this match. I am a big fan of Shayna Baszler. I like Ronda Rousey, and I always try to give it a benefit of the doubt. That match yesterday, boring chants were trying to leak out, and I didn't like it at all.
And they showed, and a couple of clips have been released by certain fans who were there, of mass exodus, concession stands and restrooms during that match, which is never a good look.
It's not.
You know, it's just not a good look. And here's the thing, DT, despite the Endeavor ownership that takes place and goes more into full effect in the new year, and the tie-in with Ultimate Fighting and MMA and mixed martial arts and stuff, I don't think WWE fans, wrestling fans, don't want to see that. I think that, you know, you even go back to the Brawl for All, the real fighting, and it was so shit upon, and the fans hated it and stuff. I don't think we want to see real fights, but we're curious. Like, can Karrion Kross tap out almost if he wanted to? Like, you know, we all have this thing in our head, who's really the bad? Can Undertaker really take on Ken Shamrock? Well, you know, we think about stuff like that. But we kind of really don't want to see it. Right. It's best left in fantasy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because when I saw Bradshaw box Dr. Death and stuff like that, I was like, I don't want to see this ever again.
You either want to see full-blown or you want to see nothing. And they were...
Yeah, full-blown or nothing. Right, exactly.
And yesterday was extremely watered down. It was not very good. And the sad thing about it is they legitimately put a lot of work into this, and they really connected in a lot of shots. But unfortunately, when you're seeing nonstop, you know, suspension of disbelief, punches, kicks, nonstop action for an hour, and then you get that, like, showing it to me in slow motion and seeing it really connect, for the 2-3 hours, we're supposed to believe that everything connects.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. So, yeah, if I were WWE, I know they're merging with UFC, but they got to seriously consider not doing that again.
Yeah, you could be associated, but you don't have to be a copy of either. And yeah, it was just uncomfortable. And like I said, everyone is having kind of fun with it, showing the clips of mass exodus to the restrooms and the thing. And they're showing that they were in the ring, so it's not doctored photos. It's actually happening. You know what I mean, DT? They're not photoshopping it. And it's cringy. It's like, okay, we get it. You know, I think these girls realize they were the worst match on the bill. It's not, I don't want to see this go on now for a week. I get it. You know what I mean, DT? It's like a wound. Let it heal. I feel bad. You know, if you like Shayna Baszler, then you probably don't want to drive that point home. It's only going to make it worse for her. Ronda's probably leaving. Shayna's got to exist here. You know, so let's hope that she can bounce back from this.
Yeah, when Shayna hit the kick to Ronda's head early on and Ronda fell to the outside and there was no crowd pop whatsoever,
no,
that was kind of like,
none.
Yeah. But at least, you know what, Kev? At least Germany liked it. They showed that screenshot from the fans in Germany.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It's funny because, you know, Detroit is, you know, got that hardened, hard edge to it. You know, Detroit, You know, the Motor City, it's kind of, you know, a real tough, gritty, blue-collar American. So you would think they would like a good fight.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, they didn't really bring the kids there for that.
It's a shame. It's a shame. Yeah. And Shayna chokes out Ronda Rousey to get the win. And, you know, it appears that Shayna did legitimately suffer an elbow or an arm injury.
That's what I heard.
Me, the death nail was the very beginning when we had a WWE referee.
Oh, like, yeah, that's
I mean,
true.
You could have used a guy from the concession stand. But when you see a familiar WWE face refereeing this, do you know that that guy never refereed an MMA match before? And he's like, this is not WWE rules, that you could only win by TKO. I'm like, oh, God.
They could have brought in any. There's a ton of women that are affiliated with Endeavor and stuff like that. They could have brought in a notable woman who knew UFC, someone who even had some fights under her belt. But maybe, who's going to know who that is? All right, if it gets the referee doesn't matter, then you're right, DT. They could have just brought in even a lower-level MMA indie ref.
Yeah.
And then put him over on commentary. This guy, refed 100 matches, MMA underground fights. Put him over. Cole can put him over. What's going to be the difference? Watching at home. Oh, okay, that's who he is? I didn't recognize the guy. But instead, they get a WWE referee, and right there again, it just wasn't put together well.
No.
I don't know who was in charge of putting that together. Whether it was Michael Hayes, or I don't know who had the agent thing on that match, but did not work out.
No. And when Ronda lifted her gloves, and they pointed out it's the first time ever in her MMA career that she lifted her gloves before the match started, WWE fans don't care about that.
Nope.
Yeah, they didn't care about it at all. I mean, they tried, but that was my least favorite. Shayna chokes out Ronda, gets the win. Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar. I guess we could talk about that match next because that was our favorite match of the night. I'll say this. I said a little bit of this earlier. There's a reason why Roman Reigns and Jey Uso is not my favorite. And, you know, they pulled out all the stops, the chairs, the tables, the Singapore canes, the straps. They brawled into the crowd. You know, we had Solo and Jimmy Uso, and we'll get into that a little bit because, as I've teased online a few times, scenario you and I talked about back in the Money in the Bank days, we made a prediction that's going to happen later on this year, maybe as late as Survivor Series. And what we predicted is still in play, and that is the fatal four-way between all members of the Bloodline. But what turned me off early on with the Bloodline tribal combat was, and I joked, I made a passing joke on Saturday, and I was reminded about the joke today, and it really turned me off. When you go back to when Jey Uso had the confrontation with Roman Reigns, and Jey Uso said tribal combat. And Roman said, do the elders know? And Jey Uso says, it was their idea, Us. And they're acting like respect and this and that. We realize that all the elders proposed was a Viking Raiders rules match. It was just a no DQ match. There was nothing to it. There was no war paint. There was no props, tribal props. There were no elders at ringside. There was no rituals. It was, to me, honestly, and please do not misconstrue this, family, a lazy no DQ match. Tribal combat, leave the elders out of it. To make it sound like this is primitive, the elders came up with this. It's like it was a no DQ match. That's all it was. The best part, and you and I used to talk about this in the early days of the DTKC show. We used to say, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, we would see it in the mid-2000s, it was really apparent. You'd have two guys that want to tear each other's head off, and they're hyping up a big pay-per-view match. I'm going to tear you, I'm going to kill you, and this and that. And then the match starts off with a headlock. They literally started off with headlocks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is tribal combat? I mean, I know it picked up afterwards, but that set the tone for me. That's why it's not my favorite match of the night. Because all it was a no DQ match at the end of the day. But the opening match, and we knew this was going to be the open because Logan Paul wanted to walk his brother Jake Paul down the aisle, who had a successful fight yesterday against Nate Diaz. Ricochet versus Logan Paul to open up the show. To me, Kev, I don't like Logan Paul. I really am not a fan of his, but I cannot believe it's not just how smooth he is in the ring, but the wherewithal to know the instinct to reverse, to counter, to take offense. Like, he doesn't get like brain cramps. I'm kind of blown away. And when Corey Graves said that in his career, he's never seen anybody pick this up this quickly, I kind of agree with him. I am kind of, you know, it's not like a simple celebrity. Like, you get, you know, like trying to think the WCW from what's his face,
Dennis
Rodman, and, you know, some of the other basketball.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Green.
Kevin Green's another one. Yeah. I can't believe that this guy has picked up this much high-flying offense in such a short amount of time. What did you think of this match?
They'll say also, you know, a lot of people, when they talk about someone who took like a duck to water and became a sensation, Kurt Angle, but Kurt Angle was a real wrestler. Logan Paul was not a NCAA, I don't even think Logan Paul went to college, you know, NCAA champion, Olympian. So I, every time everyone goes, think of someone who took to the sport and just became, you know, a big deal within a year or two. Well, Kurt Angle, and Brock Lesnar would be another one, even though they were in OVW, and Kurt Angle was in Memphis for about a year. It wasn't like he just appeared on the WWE stage. Him and Brock were both trained in pro wrestling after making the jump from amateur wrestling, needed about a year in the AAA system. Logan Paul trained, obviously, with Kendrick and other people, from what I understand. But he, you're right, he took, him and his brother are just, I was watching the documentary on Netflix. I don't know if anybody's seen it yet. There's a new documentary on Jake Paul on Netflix. Just came out last week. And it shows his boxing, and he has taken to boxing the way his brother Logan has taken to wrestling. These two guys, I mean, I know Logan boxes too, but he's not remotely as good as his brother Jake in boxing. And Logan is the wrestler. You know, who knows if Jake can wrestle? Maybe he's got the talent for it too. Who knows? But yeah, Logan Paul, I don't like him as a person. I think they're both smug and obnoxious and have done a lot of questionable things to even get their success. You know, the whole YouTube influencer and stuff. Eh, sure. I'll put that to the side for now and just say that he's a rare gem. Let's call him that as far as wrestling goes. He is very good. He has the douche face. Want to see him get his face punched in thing down packed, you know?
Yeah.
You know, people, you want to see him get beat up. That's why he's not good as a baby face, by the way. Should be a heel. He should be a heel. He's got that Miz douchey. You know, even Mike Mizanin sometimes can be charming and likable, him and his wife. I mean, sometimes I like them, but I don't like Logan Paul. You know, I don't think I like him in real life as much as I don't know him, but in real life and wrestling character, not a fan. But as you just gave him credit, we would be ridiculous to not give him credit for what he achieves in the ring. And I honestly thought that Ricochet needed the rub. He needed the win, and didn't work out that way. So I picked that match wrong because I believe I picked Ricochet. I just think that, I don't know. I don't know where Ricochet goes from here. I know where Logan Paul goes from here, because Logan Paul can kind of feud with anybody. I think they're just, he's going to start with somebody like he did with Seth Rollins. Logan Paul comes out. Yeah, you know, you're a this, you're a that. He gets smug, and there he's an insta-made feud, right, DT? Yeah. But where does Ricochet go from here? A guy that they've invested in for, how long has he been here now? Six years?
He's got to be at least 5-6 years. Absolutely.
Mid-30s. He's likable. He got decent reaction because we're going to talk about how the crowd was hot and cold. I thought they were pretty hot for Ricochet, don't you? I thought the crowd was pretty good for him. And then they evolved a little bit of the Samantha Irvin thing, and she had boo-boo face when her boyfriend won and lost, and she had to announce. Is there more to this feud? Because do you think this is not the end of this, DT?
You know, I feel like it is the end to it.
He got hit with brass knuckles. We're leaving out a big part.
Right.
One of his cronies from the podcast or whatever he does, yeah. It wasn't his brother. It was one of, I don't know the name of that guy. I don't watch his podcast. And he gave him the brass knuckles. A nice worked punch that he threw, by the way, because yes. I watched it again today. I almost think he a little connected a little bit there with those brass knuckles. He got, you know, good consummate heel, got the heel thing down packed. You want to see him get his face smashed in. But it can't be one and done. Don't they got to give Ricochet a comeuppance?
I feel like Ricochet deserves a rematch. The problem is on what scale? I mean, I know they're going to India. I think it's September 9th. And maybe if India, I don't know what kind of money they're paying. I don't think they're paying Saudi money. But Saudi Arabia did want Logan Paul. And I think we got Logan versus Roman in Saudi Arabia. But we could possibly get Logan Paul versus Ricochet in India. But you feel like there's unfinished business because Logan Paul did get the brass knucks and hit him. You know, one thing I got a kick out of is, you know, Logan Paul has his Prime energy drink. And like towards the end of the night, I realized like, oh, suddenly this is all sponsored by C4, which is an energy drink, which is their rival, which was pretty funny because Bianca, she's on the rampway and she's drinking a C4. I'm like, what the hell is that all about? And then I realized, oh, okay, here's a sponsor. Like if they wanted to drink Bud Light, maybe we would have somebody come out with Bud Light, even though it's an alcoholic beverage. But I did like Ricochet coming out with the Optimus Prime gear. Some people reading too much into it. Oh, Logan Paul has Prime energy drink, so Ricochet comes out as Optimus Prime. I will say I enjoyed Logan Paul doing what he calls the Hogan Paul leg drop, where he does the leg drop, but he does it as a split. Instead of just a regular leg drop, he tries to do a split, which I really enjoyed. I mean, these guys work spectacular together. And I think, as crazy as this sounds, even though he lost, this Ricochet may be at the top of his WWE game right now because of the crowd reaction, because he feels a little bit more important. You know, he doesn't feel like just like an opening match guy. Yeah, I don't see him as a main eventer, but I'm with you. I feel like they deserve one additional match, that the brass knucks is not enough. And I don't want to see something stupid where somebody confronts Ricochet in the back. Oh, you got knocked out. And then Ricochet challenges him to a match or vice versa. And there's your feud to get away from Logan Paul. I get that weird feeling we're going to get something like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But I thought it was a good match. I thought it was a good kickoff.
Yeah, it was excellent.
The crowd was energized. Again, we'll talk about how from match to match it fluctuated. Detroit was very strange. It was hard to get a measure on what was going on there. Was it the match or was it the crowd? Was it the heat? Was it the August? Lazy dog days of summer? I don't know what it was, but that match had good audience input.
Yeah. I will say this, since you brought up the crowd, the announced crowd for last night was 59,194. This is why I don't pay attention as much to these websites that post like ticket sales and, you know, available tickets online. You know, WrestleTix is a good example of it. A couple of hours before SummerSlam, they said that the total tickets distributed was 50,608. The announced attendance was 59,194. They were off by 8,500 tickets, Kev. Not 1,000 tickets. Almost 9,000 tickets. And, you know, I brought this up yesterday. If I'm AEW with Wembley, I include all the vendors, all the parking lot attendants. Anybody that is inside that arena, you count as a number. And Michael Cole, very, very, I don't want to say devious, but very explicit when he announced the crowd. He said the total in attendance. That doesn't mean people who were there because they wanted to see SummerSlam. These are people that could just be working the event. But that's why you don't go by what these people claim online, because almost 9,000 more people. 9,000. You know, just imagine, you know, how many employees do you think are in the arena? Maybe a couple of hundred? Maybe 1,000, and there's there's a publicly traded company. They cannot finagle their books and put a number like that if it's not true. So, you know,
that's true.
But so that was the opening match. The second match, And the funny thing is, Kev, is I think Brock and Cody came on second because maybe Brock wanted to attend the MMA fight. I really believe that. I got to find out if Brock was in attendance for it. I have a feeling that he was, but we get, you know, Cody Rhodes versus Brock Lesnar. And they pointed out something that kind of blew me away. When you look at Brock Lesnar's physique and you see how good he could still go now, his first SummerSlam match was 21 years ago against The Rock. And they said this was, even though it was only match two on the card, this was his 10th SummerSlam main event. But you look at wrestlers in their career. But did you ever think that Brock would still be doing it? Not just 21 years later, but and be in this kind of condition 21 years later?
Dude, I got to say, he looks the best I've ever seen him, the most intimidating I've ever seen him. He looked like a giant baby back in 2003, like the clean shaven. And yeah, he was a badass and stuff and pushing Zach Gowen down the steps and all that stuff. But he is at his most badass. Like me looking at him as the eyes of a 55-year-old man saying, who would be a guy who really would intimidate me if like I knew he was like I was on the bad side of him? And I look at Brock, I'm like, forget his reputation, just him of his physical presence. I'm like, this guy looks like he could take our heads off. And he just has that. He's Brock Lesnar already, but he has the physical look to back it up. You know, not everybody, and I get it, today's MMA guys, some of the best guys are guys that, you know, are unassuming and they don't look, they're badasses in what they can do in the ring, but they look like the average normal guys. I love the fact that he looks the part. I like more of the image, you know, just like Undertaker, he looks like an American badass. I like when they look as advertised. And Brock Lesnar, as far as his physique, the hair, the beard, the scowl, everything he's got in his middle-aged Brock Lesnar, he looks like, and it's not like, oh, he can still go in MMA. I don't care if he can do that. What he can do is still be a presence in pro wrestling. He is the most intimidating-looking guy in all of wrestling. There's not even anybody you can compare him to. And he's still got that presence. He's still, I guess you can call him the gatekeeper in a way. We'll talk about his endorsement of Cody Rhodes, which is a major thing, which you're right. I believe he did on his own. It was not scripted. I think Brock does whatever he wants, to be quite honest with you. And I think Cody was, if I watched it again, I watched the replay and I watched Cody's way of checking him out. And Cody was not acting. He looked like he wasn't sure what's happening here at one point. And then Cody just went with it. And especially when Brock was raising Cody's arm, it looked like Cody wasn't in the flow with that DT. Yeah. So he clearly didn't go, I'm going to raise your arm. Because Cody was probably like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? It's like, and that's what I loved about it. Because I rewatched it. I watched it. I rewound it. I watched it again. I believe Cody did not know he was going to raise his arm to corner to corner like that.
You're right.
I don't think he knew. And I think that's Brock saying, now you got my respect. I'm endorsing you on my own. I endorse you.
Yeah.
No one told me to endorse you.
I'll take it one step further in a few moments, and this has to do with Roman Reigns, but the story of this match is first of all, Brock hit, I counted 11 suplexes to Cody Rhodes. We had three or four wash and repeats during the match where Brock would hit Cody with a couple of suplexes and Cody falls out of the ring. And the ref starts counting. And early on, Brock is yelling to Cody, save yourself. This is only going to get worse. Cody gets in at the count of five. Brock hits him with a couple of more suplexes. Brock is getting a little angrier. Hits a massive clothesline to Cody. And if you watch it, he nails him in Cody's face. Cody goes to the outside. Referee goes for the count. Third time, fourth time. Cody now getting in at the count of eight. The count of nine. Brock totally pissed off now. F5 to the floor. We see Michelle, Cody's mom, who is very, very concerned. You know, and Brock is telling Michael Cole to convince Cody to stay down. And the ref is counting out Cody for a fifth time. But this time around, Cody gets back in the ring and Cody is getting pissed. Cody's telling Brock, give it to me. Give it to me. And Cody starts finally getting a little bit of offense. There was one point where Brock was going to hit Cody with a suplex, and Cody was holding on to the corner turnbuckle so he wouldn't get suplexed, and then all of a sudden the turnbuckle pops off. and Cody gets suplexed, that would come into play later. Because later on in the match, Cody finally gets some offense, throws Brock into the corner steps, hits Brock in the shoulder with the steps, which I know people online, oh, he should have been disqualified. You know, you can't say that when you're a big fan of AEW and nothing gets disqualified. Right. But Cody with a few Cody cutters. And it, at one point, I think Cody locked in the Kimura. And for people out there that were wondering if Brock Lesnar had ever tapped out in his career, I did a little checking. Brock has tapped out three times in his career. SummerSlam 03, he tapped out to Kurt Angle's ankle lock. On SmackDown in September of 03, he tapped out during an Iron Man match with Kurt Angle. And Survivor Series 03, he actually tapped out to Chris Benoit. So the only three times that Brock has ever tapped out were 20 years ago. So he hasn't tapped out in 20 years. But in the end, Brock goes for the F5. Cody turns it into three crossroads, gets the win, and then we get a little bit of shooting. Match is over. Brock Lesnar extends his hand. Cody shakes his hand. Brock then hugs Cody a little bit. And then Brock goes to each side of the ring, holding Cody's arm up. And Cody is selling a little bit of soreness with the arm, but also has got a confused look on his face. Like, what is this guy doing? And then Brock nods, gives a nod of approval to Cody, and then walks up the rampway. And then Cody tells the fans, we're on our way. And here's what I'm thinking. We never got an explanation as to why these two were feuding in the first place. Now, I know we upset some people last week because we were joking around about, you know, maybe Brock just did it because he wanted to. The fact is, maybe Brock did it in storyline because he wanted to. We don't
exactly.
We don't need to be, you know, like told every little nook and cranny. But here's what I'm thinking. Brock Lesnar don't like Roman Reigns. Brock Lesnar can no longer challenge Roman Reigns for the world championship. And I'm starting to think maybe the storyline is going to be that when Cody Rhodes failed at WrestleMania, now, yes, why would Brock Lesnar give a shit? But when Cody Rhodes failed at WrestleMania, maybe Brock Lesnar, you know, Cody wanted the ultimate challenge. Like, he's got to be better prepared for Roman Reigns. What better preparation than to fight Brock Lesnar, who has defeated Roman Reigns in the past? So Cody Rhodes ends up going the trifecta with Brock and winning the third match, and Brock nodding to Cody Rhodes. That might be Brock's way of saying, now you're ready for Roman Reigns.
Right. It's a testing pattern, and people would say, oh, Cody's in the business for 15 years. Yeah, but he's been a top guy for a very short period when you think about it. He's becoming a top guy in WWE. He was a top guy, again, sorry for the analogy, but this is true. Big fish in a small pond, right, DT? And now he's coming to the bigger platform and becoming that guy. Will he be as big as his dad for that longevity? That's very difficult to do. He's got to be his own man. It has nothing to do with can he be on top like Dusty was for all those years. It's not really about that, even though Dusty plays into this for the legacy of getting the title that Dusty never got. But Dustin's definitely his own character. And I think that, look, he's still over. His merch is still selling. He is not falling apart as people thought he would with these interim feuds while he waits to get back in line and get to the front of the line as he is for Roman Reigns again. WrestleMania next year will be here before you know it. Time is going by. We're already getting into the second week of August. It's going by like that. So when people go, oh, WrestleMania is still a long time away, it's really not that long, you know, 6 months. It's you know, it'll be here before you know it, and there's a lot to do, and there'll be some pay-per-views in between and feuds to go through, maybe a fight with a returning Randy Orton to do a little legacy thing, or maybe Bray Wyatt comes back. But you're right, Brock was a huge test. And people were asking me, Kev, did you kind of not like, though, the way Cody was kind of beat like a rag doll for most of this feud? And kind of, no, because is it admirable that you can take a beating? Yes, it is admirable that you can take a beating when you keep coming back. Anybody ever see Rocky?
Rocky Balboa.
Exactly. Anybody see Rocky, Mr. T? You know, Rocky goes, I'm afraid, okay? I'm afraid.
You can't win, Rock.
You know, right, he's got to come back again. That was the whole point of Rocky. And guess what? Those movies went to number one because people like the story of a likable underdog. And it's very Rocky-esque. I think if Cody ever does a shoot interview one day once he's done with WWE or out of the business, say, oh, yeah, I took some stuff from Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Rocky Balboa, the comeback. We took a lot from that. There's no doubt. I don't know if he'll say it now, but I'm sure there is something to that. It still holds true. It never goes out of style. But you have to be a likable underdog for people to get behind you. He is that guy. I don't even think I don't even entertain debates anymore.
Right.
That if it's it maybe should be LA Knight. It shouldn't be LA Knight. It should be Cody Rhodes. He has worked to get here. He is putting in the matches. He's putting on the matches. He is doing 4 to 5 star matches. That series he had with Seth last year was amazing. He is on the path. There is nobody else. I'm not going to debate it with anybody because you'd be wrong. And I don't need to wait till WrestleMania to prove myself right again. If you are a wrestler, astute wrestling fan, have any bit of knowledge, paying attention, he's that guy. And if you didn't believe it before the Brock match, you should believe it after what you saw with the endorsement from Brock.
Absolutely. And I want to see Brock Lesnar to show up and confront Cody Rhodes on WWE TV. And all I want Brock to tell Cody, kick Roman's ass.
Yeah, and by the way, being in Philly means nothing because he's already been to Philly. Cody's over in Philly, so I'm not worried about the Philly crowd turning on Cody and Roman. Philly notorious doesn't like Roman.
Philly,
so I think it's going to be a rousing ovation when Cody wins the title.
But maybe Philly is the home of Rocky Balboa.
And it's the home of Rocky Balboa, too. I mean, isn't that interesting? Maybe Stallone will be part of the pay-per-view.
Maybe Cody could run along that bridge area. You know,
and Cody's got the dog. He's got his own Butkus. You know, it's like he's got the white dog. Right? He's got his own bike. You should rename his dog Butkus. But, you can't win. Yeah, who could be Mickey? We got to find some little old wrestler who's still around.
You know,
say hi to Arn Anderson again.
When you go back to Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like all of his opponents were these intimidating behemoths, monsters, from Ivan Drago to Mr. T, even Apollo Creed. You know, like
the Tommy Gunn, beat the show when they had the street fight. They didn't even actually have a boxing match in the match.
I think in some way, shape, or form, I don't think Triple H will be brought into this because it would look biased.
No.
But, you know, I think Cody needed a challenge, was not ready for Roman Reigns. And Brock made Cody ready. The only issue I have with that is that if this is the way to go where Brock, you know, in an indirect way prepared Cody, like, you got through me, now beat this motherfucker. This should have been Cody Brock 3 at Survivor Series or December. Yeah. Then you lead into the Royal Rumble. Then you win the Royal Rumble, and now you got your ticket back to WrestleMania. Doing this in August, it feels like, because, look, I feel like Randy Orton is the only person that I could see show up, and I don't think anybody would have an issue with him feuding with Cody Rhodes. I love Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt, I have so much merch and collectible stuff, and I didn't buy it because I think it's going to be worth a crazy amount one day. I'm a big fan of Bray Wyatt. I will even say, if Bray Wyatt shows up and attacks Cody Rhodes, people are going to be like, wow, what a fucking drop. You go from Brock Lesnar to Bray Wyatt? Like, and the bad thing about it is it puts so much pressure on Bray Wyatt that if I fucking bomb with Cody Rhodes, this is going to hurt Cody Rhodes' momentum as well. That's why I don't think they should even dare consider putting Bray Wyatt with Cody Rhodes. It is too risky. But, you know, Bray Wyatt came back, and everybody was loving, you know, the white rabbits and the QR codes and, you know, the teasing and, you know, the Uncle Howdy. And it turned into beyond a dud. Like, that hurt LA Knight. And you can't risk hurting Cody Rhodes. It's got to be forward, not backward. So unless Drew McIntyre turns heel and attacks Cody, I think Drew is either going to attack Cody or attack Seth Rollins. I'm undecided as of right now. Like, I don't think the fans would consider it a step down if Drew attacks Cody. But the problem is Drew just lost to Gunther. So why would Drew feel that he should be in line for, you know, and how does that even factor into Roman Reigns?
It feels like there's a lot of ways they can go with this. I mean, the main component is Reigns and Cody at Mania. How'd they get there and kind of go around the block and take on some challenges in the middle? Because we'll talk about it after we finish reviewing the pay-per-view. Sheamus seems to be working an angle, in my opinion, online, bad-mouthing Roman Reigns. And this is a work, by the way. It's not real.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And Sheamus being very, very disgruntled, he's probably got a feud with AJ Styles, and this may lead to a feud some way, shape, or form of Roman Reigns not getting an opportunity. Because, look, you of course, the bloodline infighting is going to continue, but you cannot have that go all the way to Mania.
No, they need an opponent, and I think Sheamus matches up good with Roman. They haven't fought yet. It's a fresh feud.
Yeah.
Especially if Randy Orton does come back and gets tied up with Cody. Because people are like, I'd like to see Randy Orton versus Roman Reigns. Well, I think Sheamus would be a good interim guy, and they could play on this disgruntled thing. But I was kind of laughing, and I even posted "if" in quotes because I know it's a work. Sheamus openly bad mouthing Roman. This is not AEW. I think Sheamus is working people. You know, and the frustration might be real, but he's playing upon it.
Sheamus is a professional. Sheamus just got married. Sheamus wants to retire in the WWE. Sheamus is not going to rub the most important person of that company and management aside because he feels that he deserves an opportunity. He knows what is going on. If anybody that thinks that Sheamus is going into business for himself, come on. Seriously? It's ridiculous. And speaking of Sheamus, you know, I already typed up most of the synopsis for this episode. And one of the things I wrote, I thought this was very important. We had the Battle Royal next. And, you know, LA Knight won the Battle Royal. And we all wanted it. It happened. We got what we asked for. One thing that I thought was very, very important in this Battle Royal, which I think a lot of people didn't even notice, but, you know, LA Knight got some redemption. Because on SmackDown the night before, there was a spot where LA Knight climbed the ropes to give Sheamus a belly-to-belly. And something happened, either Sheamus moved a little bit backwards or LA Knight slipped, and it looked sloppy. And LA Knight got a lot of shit for it. Yesterday, during the Battle Royal, it came down to Sheamus and LA Knight. And at the very end, Sheamus climbed the top rope or the middle rope. LA Knight climbed the rope also, gave him that belly-to-belly. And then eliminated Sheamus. So LA Knight was able to execute that move the next night. It was a 25-man battle royal. If anybody looked at the graphic and counted the number of heads, it was only 24. So we were going to get a surprise 25th entry. That ended up being Omos. So Omos eliminating quite a few people. Rick Boogs, the Brawling Brutes, Imperium eliminates Otis because Imperium and Alpha Academy may be the next feud for those two teams. Cross looked good. Ciampa looked good. Eliminated both members of the Viking Raiders. Bronson Reed looked good as well. Then we had, you know, Santos Escobar eliminating Austin Theory to add a little bit of hype to their match on SmackDown this Friday. Grayson Waller and The Miz working together for a few moments, which look great. What do you think about The Miz and Grayson Waller as a tag team? I know they're on different brands, but I don't know. There's something about those two guys together. I think it would be fucking awesome, man.
When I saw them look at each other with those dopey faces, I'm like, douche faces unite. I mean, again, talk about douche face. They have that face that just you want to punch if you don't like them. I mean, just both of them, they have that smug smile and smirk. They're kind of doppelgangers of each other. Obviously, Miz is the original of this kind of character. And, you know, Grayson Waller, I think, absolutely borrows from. There's no doubt. Miz has been around for 15 years now. Grayson Waller absolutely grew up on The Miz. So there's no doubt Grayson has taken some stuff from The Miz and is upswing of his career and getting into the business. So I'm sure he would even admit Miz is an influence to me. Nothing wrong with that. Miz is a great talker. Grayson Waller is a great talker. You know, we're going to give LA Knight a pass on The Rock. We can give Grayson Waller a pass on some of the stuff he does is very Miz-like.
Yes.
And now we have Shotzi's become Bruce the Barber Beefcake. Because I said DT the other day, I hope there's a reincarnation of Strike Force.
Oh,
you know, that would be awesome. Girls and cars. I think that they have a lot in common. It looks like big brother, little brother, or uncle and nephew. I'm father and son. Miz is not that much older than him, but they have a commonality there. Obviously, I think there could be a real pain in the ass nudge kind of heel tag team, not an evil, like, you know, beatdown squad, but just a couple of chicken shit heels who are going to stir it up and then people will chase them in the back. I think it'll be a kind of a great pain in the ass heel tag team. I'd love to see them team up. And really, what has Miz got to lose, by the way, DT?
Sure.
And Grayson Waller's still fresh in the business, right? He's still fresh in the business.
Yeah.
Team him up.
It's kind of like if you have a group of friends and you got like a guy friend that's an absolute asshole and then you got a girlfriend that's an absolute pain in the ass as well and then you find out that they start dating.
Yeah, exactly. You're made for enjoy each other until you kill each other. I liked it. And let's also put off Boy Crossover. I thought did very well in the battle royal. He was one of the last six in the ring. You know, he did well. I think they're giving him a little bit of a push. Not you know, people like but listen, you know, he was in the final six. You know, there was 25 people in the battle royal. So coming out number six is not being the last six is not bad. And again, I'm still seeing good things for him. I'm going to be curious to see where he goes from here. Obvious, the feud with AJ Styles is far from over. He attacked him outside the ring again after that. A little side note. I enjoyed the Battle Royal, and I'm glad LA Knight won. I'm glad that the LA Knight won because it gave the people what they wanted to see. You know what I mean? That they wanted to see the winner, and now he's going to be the Slim Jim guy. He's going to be the, I guess people are comparing him to Macho Man of 2023. is taking over. Oh, yeah. So, I guess it's a lateral move. Don't you think so, TT?
I do.
The Macho Man's phrase, one less word than what LA Knight's doing right now.
Well, I'll tell you this much. You know, you could look at it like, you know, for Slim Jim, you could also look at it like a hybrid of the Yes Movement with Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like we're going to get Yeah Movement shirts. Absolutely. I think some of it is going to be mocked from, you know, or similar to the Daniel Bryan stuff. But
see, but I was hoping they wouldn't do that. I hope I always thought it makes it uncool. It makes it forced and less organic when you call it a move. When you call it a movement, you know, Black Lives Matter was a movement. Yeah. I don't see, you know, when a wrestler getting cheered as a movement. I don't know. I like to. When I think of movements, I think of, you know, marching on Washington.
I don't think
of people getting behind a wrestling character as a movement.
Think of how cheap the shirts would cost by simply just having a font on the shirt that says "Yeah" with a big exclamation point on it. You know that shit's gonna come out. There's gonna be a black shirt that's gonna have like maybe like neon green, and it's gonna just say "Yeah," and people are gonna just walk around wearing it. It's almost like the Austin 3:16 shirt. All it's gonna say is "Yeah" with an exclamation point. They're gonna sell it for $25, and it'll be like, "Holy shit, we don't even need to like draw graphics or anything. We just put "Yeah" and an exclamation point," and they're gonna make crazy money off
of it. But DT, isn't it amazing how just basically the word "Yes" and "Yeah" and just the offshoots of that is what the song, you know, you had "Oh Yeah" from Macho Man.
Yeah.
You had "Hell Yeah" from Austin. Right. You have what do you call "Yes" from Daniel Bryan. And now "Yeah" said in a different kind of connotation from LA Knight. I mean, we're not the most original people in wrestling. But again, what is original anymore? We're really resurrecting old things and kind of letting someone make it their own, which is fine. But not exactly the most original word catchphrase. Right. Not exactly.
Well, the Slim Jim deal is a big deal. Like, WWE signed a massive deal with Slim Jim just now, so get used to it. Slim Jim's going to be around for a while in the WWE advertising. So, the commercial that they aired during SummerSlam, if I remember correctly, was LA Knight and Bianca Belair eating Slim Jims.
Yes, yeah. So then they kind of cryptically tell us who's going to win.
Yeah, maybe. You know, Bianca, I tell you, she's eating Slim Jims. She's drinking C4 energy drinks. She's becoming like the big sponsor for WWE, the big advertising
billboard. We'll get to her night that she had in a second. But overall, I thought the Battle Royal was fun. Yeah. I thought when Almost was called as the last guy, I'm like, oh, no.
Everybody that was still in the match, they all eliminated Omos for a big pop. AJ Styles hits the Pele kick to Cross, but later on Cross would hold AJ Styles, and that allowed Bronson Reed, I believe, to eliminate AJ. So now this leads to AJ versus Cross. And I mentioned this on Saturday. I tell you, man, you go back Friday and you watch when all the wrestlers came out and were standing at ringside that were going to be in this Battle Royal when LA Knight took on Sheamus. The best thing they ever did was put the muscle shirt on Cross.
Yeah, he looked good. People would tell me that. Like, oh,
he looks like a monster.
He looks like a monster. He looked great. And again, he's got the movie star looks. Whether you're a fan of his or not, you can't deny his physical presence. And even when, what's his name, jumped on top of him. LWO guy. He was like, you know, trying to, like, it was like jumping on top. He's another monster.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say next to Brock, physically imposing looking, but we all know Cross is such a nice guy. Sometimes people forget, but they're like when he does the bad guy thing, he's got that. He's got the look down packed. And that's why I like the hair and I like the beard. I like the hair gets messed up and stuff. And as Cross says, as long as he has hair, he wants to keep it. I mean, it's different if you're going bald, but he always laughs when people want him to shave his head. He's like, 38, have a full head of hair. It's a blessing.
I know.
So, it is true. I mean, I agree with him. And I think he looks good. And he came out there and it wasn't the emphasis on Scarlett. Everyone was saying, I got to say, Cross looks in place out there with these top guys. He doesn't look out of place. He had a nice presence. And I think he had a pretty good showing in the Battle Royal. I think it's baby steps with him. Obviously the focus is on LA Knight right now, and deservedly so. But keep your eye on Cross. I think you're going to see good things from him.
Yeah. So LA Knight gets the win, last eliminating Sheamus, and right move from WWE. Now, I think this leads to Austin Theory retaining on Santos Escobar, and then I think LA Knight's going to challenge Austin Theory for that championship.
Yeah.
I think LA Knight is your next United States champion. I don't think it should happen right away, though, because you brought up this point a week or two ago. Like, WWE took their sweet time pushing LA Knight. LA Knight got a few too many losses. Just because you get one or two wins. Now, I know with Io Sky, if you think about it, Io Sky has lost a hell of a lot of matches as well.
Oh,
she lost
hell
to
yeah.
Zelina the night before, and she's champion now. But the thing is that LA Knight has to have those wins because, everybody could chant and everybody could, go along with his shtick. But there's something also when you get acknowledgement that he won a match. That's why everybody went nuts yesterday, because it's not that often that LA Knight, at this point being over, that he's gotten a high-profile win. When you beat Ray, it was nothing, it was much less than this. It was some momentum, but not like it is now. But I think LA Knight is going to challenge Austin Theory.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And by the way, I know that he's still officially on paper a heel, but DT, when he goes after Austin Theory, then he's a babyface and there's no turning back, you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I know they're still booking him as a heel, but he's really not a heel.
Yeah, I think the turning point was the stuff he was doing on the house shows with Hit Row, and then they finally brought it to TV.
Right.
The Hit Row, right. I mean, everybody hates the Hit Row right now.
So. Jesus, but they weren't including anything.
It reminds me of Steve Austin in 98. He was what basically what WWE was doing was Steve Austin didn't change anything about him. He was just going out there and stunning heels. Like, he really would, stun the occasional face. Like, he would just stun whoever's in the ring. But for the most part, WWE started to have him come out there and fuck with the heels. That's what they do with LA Knight. They'll book a match with LA Knight. It's interesting because they put him up against Sheamus on Friday, and it led to the Battle Royal, and Sheamus was the one getting booed.
That's what I said. I said, as much as everyone banger after banger, people kind of forgot about that. And last night, there was no love for Sheamus. They totally turned on him for LA Knight.
Yeah, and Sheamus had a good time with it. Sheamus knows. I mean, it's funny. I mean, you didn't hear Sheamus online, ripping anything about LA Knight. you know, when Sheamus supposedly shot on Roman Reigns, you didn't hear them say, you didn't hear him saying anything like, you know, here's this Rock ripoff that hasn't really won much of matches and you, everybody wants it. You know, I mean, like, if Sheamus is going to bitch about anything, probably bitch a little bit more about, you know, LA Knight, I think, than Roman Reigns.
Exactly. And if he's like, you know, and also remember, Reigns is the, is a big time heel and Sheamus is supposed to be a babyface.
Yes, absolutely. And Sheamus, and you know, it's interesting too. If he goes up and feuds with AJ, you know, AJ's a babyface right now too. So could they be turning?
I'm sorry. Yeah, and that happened to another. You mentioned, you know, his partner in crime in Slim Jim. That happened to Bianca. The yes. fans kind of turned on her for another for a heel in a faction that usually gets booed.
Yes. Well, we'll get to that soon. But yeah. First, let's talk about Drew McIntyre and Gunther.
Oh, okay.
Basically, this match, they tried to make each other's chest into mincemeat. At one point, they had a chop fest. I counted 22 chops. Jesus. Drew McIntyre hit the Claymore only for a two. There was one point where Gunther was on the top rope, and they're doing moves that you would think almost like cruiserweights would do. This was a war. It started out a little bit slow. I mean, they were trying to get their footing, and you know, it's in the beginning they're feeling each other out. But we remember at WrestleMania the three way with Sheamus. You know, they really had a couple of moments that were really, really smooth, and they finally, I'd say about 5 minutes in, got their groove. Once they got their groove, they didn't turn back. I mean, we got a mild "This is awesome" chant in the Ricochet Logan Paul match, but this match, I honestly go back and I did not hear any "This is awesome" chants with Cody versus Brock. And that's not a knock. That match was consistent, top all the way through. It didn't have the peaks. Sometimes people chant "This is awesome" when something suddenly peaks and they get like a huge moment, and they live in that moment for a few seconds. With Brock and Cody, it was just on a top level, and it stood that way the whole match. It told the story more than anything else. But these guys just beat the fuck out of each other. But in the end, no Imperium at ringside, no interference. Drew McIntyre gets crotched whilst going on the top rope, attempting a suplex. That allows Gunther to hit a splash onto Drew. Hits a lariat, powerbomb, wins. And what I thought was very telling, as Gunther was standing in the ring in victory, Drew McIntyre was just walking up that rampway, pissed off, almost the insinuation that he's walking off and he ain't coming back. I know that's not the case, but there was a look on Drew's face, you know, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we get a Jabroni News website saying that Drew McIntyre is very, very disgusted right now and the way WWE is using him and jobbing out to Gunther, which is not true. And by the way, when we did predictions, we said that, you know, like when people are getting wins, you know, like people write reports that, oh, management is high on this person and they're getting along well. And we said that's going to happen with LA Knight. Literally the next day, all the bullshit websites started doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
But what did you think of this match? I mean, this match, I enjoyed it. It wasn't my top favorite. It was solid. Something felt like it was missing a little bit. I don't know what it was. It didn't feel like a memorable Gunther match. You know what I mean? Like the match with Ilya, I still remember. The matches with Sheamus.
Sheamus.
Yeah. This one, though, something felt lacking.
Yeah, it didn't. Sometimes, you know, people think these dream match, oh, they match up so perfectly. I don't know about that. I mean, their styles, their size-wise, they're similar in height, and I think Drew might be a little bit more muscle weight, probably has 25 pounds on. Funny to say, right? Old Walter, yes, who was, you know, 350. You know, now he's Mr. Slim and Trim, and Drew is actually heavier. But yeah, there's something I think off with Drew in general, just as being a baby face. I thought he was coming back as a heel, and now I believe he's turning heel for sure, for losing that, you know, because that's the only way for him to go now, because he did lose And, you know, usually it's, hey, back of the line. And I'm sure other wrestlers in a work way are going to say that on the mic to him when he tries to say, I deserve it. Oh, you just lost to Gunther, you know. But the way he can have a comeuppance is turn heel, beat down some baby face. I don't know who it's going to be.
I know who.
Oh, yeah. Who do you think is going to be?
You know, I think it's going to happen. I think we're going to, if they do it this way, which I would like, I'd like to see Drew on Raw. Mm-hmm. And Drew looks a little bit disgusted. And you have Matt Riddle show up. Come on, Drew. Oh, it's not a big deal. Drew, come on.
Yes, yeah, so they were friendly for that time he made the save. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
I a good think one. Riddle like just that, comes like out that. There and just acts like it's no big deal.
Yes,
and Drew McIntyre is like, what do you mean no big deal? And he just beats the fuck
yes,
out of
him. Yes, I like it. I like it, DT. And that's probably happened sooner or later from your lips to God's ears, as they say. That's a good one. So I think he's going to turn heel. As I have in my head, and again, not to get ahead, but I think Finn Balor's turning face, maybe even tomorrow night. But I think the something off is was Drew taking that time off, coming back, kind of not knowing where his real place is. He's come back to a new world where the bloodline is now divided. Remember when Drew last left off, the bloodline was very fully strong and intact. Now they've divided. Reigns has occupied with infighting. You got the rise of LA Knight, right? You know, you got, again, Gunther being this dominant champion. So where is Drew's Cody? He continues to rise, the
Seth,
rise of Cody.
World heavyweight champion.
Where is Drew's place here? So, and you look at the landscape, the best thing for him to do is go to Raw. You're right. Attack Matt Riddle, get into a little feud with him, maybe even get into something with Randy Orton who comes to, you know, Matt's defense or whatever. Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre match would be fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, they match up. That would be nice. So there's a lot to do with him, but I think he has to turn heel. He is babyface is not for him anymore. And this is a good being despondent that he lost this match, and maybe you know he's got to go back to the old Drew McIntyre, the one who didn't give a fuck, the ruthless Drew McIntyre, and that could be his way of dealing with taking that loss from Gunther.
Absolutely, totally agree. I think that's the necessary way because he is. Listen, Gunther's making history.
He's beating the Honky Tonk Man's record. It's around the corner.
I mean, it's a month away. I mean, so if they have plans of Drew becoming champion, I mean, a month is not a long time. I mean, I don't see Gunther losing it. Mm-mm. I don't see him losing a title right after he makes history. You know, I think Gunther keeps it a lot longer. But if they really wanted to, as soon as Gunther makes history, you know, they're going to be in India the day after. And Drew could beat him the day after, you know, and he becomes champion. But, and then what? You know, they have Gunther feud with Seth for the World Heavyweight Championship. I'm not so sure about that. I think that's awesome, but maybe that's more in line with WrestleMania. I would not put Gunther fighting for a world championship right now. I don't think that's necessary.
No, not right now. They got plenty of time.
Yeah. Well, the next match, since we're talking about the World Heavyweight Championship, the next match was Seth Rollins retaining the World Heavyweight Championship on Finn Balor. Now, this, as far as storytelling, it was right up there with Cody and Brock. This told an awesome story. Finn Balor writing in marker the word 7 on his shoulder, and the V was right in the center of where he tore his shoulder, which was tremendous. And the whole match was Finn Balor making Seth Rollins suffer, attacking the Seth Rollins' shoulder. Seth Rollins playing mind games by coming out wearing the same vest that he wore 7 years ago when he injured Finn Balor. And then when they're doing a match introduction, Seth Rollins throws the vest at Finn Balor. Finn Balor catches it, and Finn is just in a trance looking at this vest, getting flashbacks from 7 years ago. This motherfucker wore this vest when he tore up my shoulder. Now he's wearing it 7 years later to mock me. And this match, I fucking love the chemistry between Finn Balor and Seth Rollins. They can go. Crowd was loving it. Finn Balor, he's at an elite level.
Right.
To me, the Judgment Day involvement yesterday, which was very predictable, we all knew it. To me, it was very clunky because towards the latter part in the match, Finn tries a coup de grace. Seth turns it into a pedigree, hits a two count, and here is Damian Priest. Comes to ringside with the briefcase. Finn Balor throws Seth Rollins into the side of the ring. Damian Priest nails Rollins with a right hand. Finn Balor hits a pedigree of his own for almost a three count. And for some reason, now you got Damian Priest calling for Rhea Ripley and Dominic, who come down to ringside.
Right.
They distract the referee. So Damian Priest tosses the briefcase to Finn Balor to use as a weapon. And meanwhile, Finn is like a little confused with the briefcase, so Seth hits a curb stomp, but only gets a two. So Rollins decides he's going to dive to the outside, take out Dominic Mysterio. Rhea Ripley obviously can't put hands on, so Rhea is tending to Dominic. As Seth gets back in the ring, he gets attacked by Finn Balor. Finn Balor hits a coup de grace for almost a three, and then we get, to me, was a hot mess. The briefcase is still in the ring. Damian Priest distracts the referee. Finn Balor, the first time around, seemed like he didn't want to use the briefcase as a weapon. Like, there was some type of argument. I don't know why. But Damian Priest distracts the referee. Finn Balor goes for the briefcase. But as he's about to grab the briefcase, Seth curb stomps Finn Balor's head into the briefcase.
No.
Gets the win. Finn Balor just looks slowly in the direction of Damian Priest. And all you see is Damian Priest nodding in disappointment, just nodding no in disappointment, like you failed again. And that friction, you can cut it with a knife. I love the match, but I gotta be honest with you. You know, when we did predictions, we talked about that. Don't be surprised if it's a rinse and repeat of what we saw on Raw. Raw felt like a practice of what we were going to get on this premium live event, and that's pretty much what happened. I thought the Judgment Day involvement was a little messy yesterday.
Yeah.
It obviously is needed for the story, but where do we go from here? Since Damian Priest still has the briefcase, Finn Balor holds the paper bag, as we said a couple of weeks ago. Finn has no championship.
I think Balor turns babyface. I really do. I think he's going back to being. I didn't care for his outfit last night, by the way. What was that? Junior varsity basketball, high school.
Yeah, with the towel in the back pocket.
Me single A baseball. I mean, that outfit. That's why I said I knew he was losing just by the outfit he was wearing. So I can't picture those in photos with him wearing the title. I can't picture that. It was very, I mean, Jesus. I mean, he's dressed ridiculously like a teenage boy. You know, very AEW-ish, not WWE-ish at all. So I was like, yeah, just by the outfit, he's not winning. And I think he has, much like Drew, he's in a rut as a heel. He's lost most of his matches now to Edge. He lost a few to Edge. Balor is seen as a loser. I mean, even when we talk about Karrion Kross, Kross beat him 3 times 2 years ago in NXT on TV.
Yes.
So it's like Balor was always on the losing end of everything. He's got to turn babyface again. The fans will accept him back in the fold. Maybe even he forms his own little outlaw faction on the back. Lord knows J.D. McDonough's not doing anything. He was, by the way, the first guy eliminated in the Battle Royal. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
So much for him being in Judgment Day. But yeah, I could see Damian Priest. Something's got to give with these two guys. They are clashing. It cost Balor the match again. You saw how they were looking at each other. They showed some footage, by the way, of them walking back that you didn't see on camera, of them walking up the aisle and the continued infighting. Someone's saying, but yeah, Kev, you know, that bloodline is fear. These factions all falling apart. The two strongest factions. Is that smart to book it that way? I don't know. Is Judgment Day really on the level of a bloodline? I don't see them losing Finn Balor as, you know, equivalent to what's going on in the bloodline. I think I also believe Damian Priest could even maybe be champion tomorrow night where they put the title on television on the line with Seth Rollins. I don't know. Something I think big could happen post SummerSlam DT tomorrow night. Don't be surprised. But I believe Balor has to turn babyface to get some sort of a restart on his thing here in the WWE. He's just going to be seen as a Dolph Ziggler type.
Isn't that kind of amazing that for a while we were pretty much convinced that Damian Priest was going to be the one turning babyface?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not. I don't believe that anymore at all, by the way.
I'm a little surprised. I mean, not that we're wrong. I'm surprised because the perception, because even when he lost the match with Seth, you know, there wasn't a sign of respect afterwards. Crowd gave Damian Priest a prop. On the house shows, the crowd is acknowledging Damian Priest. And Damian Priest receptive from it also. You could see, you know, the look, his charisma. You know, after what he did with Bad Bunny, I think the fans, I think truthfully, if the fans had a choice of who to cheer for, I think they would choose Damian Priest over Finn Balor.
I agree with you, but I believe Priest stays with Judgment Day, yes, and then becomes the head of it, especially as champion. And I just see him being more down at this point. Remember, Finn lost. Dominic has gold. Rhea has gold. Damian Priest has the money in the bank. Finn has nothing. What does he bring to the table? I could see almost Rhea Ripley tomorrow night saying, not for nothing, we can't have a leader who's a loser. Yeah. I could see them kicking Finn out tomorrow night. And guess who comes to Finn's aid? Seth Rollins.
I think it would be pretty funny if each member of Judgment Day, Priest, Mysterio, and Ripley, they look down at their prize, and then they slowly look over to Finn Balor.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, don't you see that happening tomorrow night? Like where they call the Judgment Day, call, you know, we're going to get to the bottom of what's going on here. And I could see Damian Priest go, you know, we've decided that you are just a loser.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're all decorated. Well, I got money in the bank. I can cash in at any time. Dominic here is the North American champion. Rhea is the biggest star in the women's division. And you, like in your basketball pants, like him saying something like, MC, you know, Hammer, you pants. Lost, you know, now he could say, oh, you lost to Bad Bunny, but Damian Priest has money in the bank. It doesn't matter what he lost recently. Yeah. He's got a cash to check for the world championship at any time he wants. Finn is the odd man out, and Finn does a very, I just can picture tomorrow night, they circle the wagons, and then all of a sudden they say, you're the problem here. You know, like they say, and they're going to turn. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, crazy thing. Here comes Seth Rollins to save Finn and be his buddy.
What about Curveball? And somehow they get into an argument and a challenge is made and Damian Priest puts the briefcase up on the line against Finn Balor.
That's a possibility too, but again, I still think that Finn comes out of that as the babyface.
Yes, yes.
And maybe McDonough saves him. Maybe McDonough comes out to save him. And again, don't expect much from a crowd reaction because they don't really know who this guy is.
Yeah.
But maybe you know that's listen. Make this kid my protege. You know, kind of like a Dom Rey Mysterio thing. Let me put McDonough with me, and then maybe that could you know reinvigorate and also get another guy possibly over. Because Finn Balor is such a mainstay here at this point. He's a modern-day Tito Santana, and I'm not saying that as an insult. He's always in the mix, and he's always in something. He's, you know, I wouldn't even call Finn Balor's character reinvented. I mean, he's got the same haircut, same beard, same look. He just changes his pants. I don't know if that's a reinvigorating of a character. Is it DT if you just change your trunks?
That's true. It's going to be really intriguing to see what happens on Raw. But obviously, there's going to be some type of turn. And remember, I think the next event is called Payback. So yes, we could see some payback between those two guys. I mean, I think that the theme obviously is going to come into play for various people. But next, we have two matches left. The next one was the women's match. Asuka defending the WWE Women's Championship against Bianca Belair and Charlotte Flair. I thought it was very strange that Asuka came out second being the champion, but they wanted Bianca to come out third because they were advertising the C4 energy drink and she was drinking that energy drink. And I couldn't help but think about Logan Paul with his prime energy drink. This match, the crowd didn't seem really into it as much. Charlotte early on, you know, chopping everyone, dropping everyone. We had a lot of moves where you would have both opponents being hit at the same time, you know, Charlotte nailing Bianca, then nailing Asuka. Then we had natural selection by Charlotte Flair. She goes for a moonsault on both women, but both women get their knees up. And this is pretty even match. Crowd seemed a little bit off, but then we got something that was a little bizarre, a little strange. Asuka knocks Bianca to the outside. Charlotte knocks Asuka to the outside. Charlotte attempts a moonsault, barely touches Bianca. So I think to cover it up, Asuka immediately kicks Charlotte in the head. And we get a little bit more back and forth. Charlotte then lands a moonsault on both opponents for two. But then Charlotte throws Bianca Belair outside the ring. And we hear a loud thump. And we hear screaming. And appears that Bianca Belair landed knee first, ankle first, landed on the steps. And it sounded bad. She started screaming in pain. Officials run to ringside. Corey Graves, you know, saying maybe we shouldn't have the cameras on this. And Charlotte Flair and Asuka looking a little bit concerned, but Bianca is being tended to by officials for a while.
Right.
She then is going down the rampway, and she could hardly put any weight on the leg. Then Asuka hits a superplex on Charlotte Flair. But Bianca turns around, and then she starts running back in the ring, like sort of limping, but not limping. And, you know, like I'm thinking to myself, did she just turn heel? And did she just lie and swerved everyone? And she just faked the injury to try to get the upper hand? But then the commentators are still selling it that she did injure her leg and she's still trying to go through the match. Now, obviously, this was storyline when we get to Io Sky, but towards the end of the match, you know, Charlotte and Bianca, they're trying to pump up the crowd. We hear Bianca yelling, "Come on, bitch." And Charlotte is like, "Show me what you got." And they're exchanging punches. Charlotte locks the figure eight on Bianca. But then Asuka spits the green mist on Charlotte while she's got the figure eight. Bianca immediately rolls up Asuka and wins. So now Bianca Belair is your new WWE Women's Champion. Without any hesitation, Io Sky's music hits. She comes down the rampway with Bayley, and you would have thought that everything that's been happening with Bayley and Io Sky the last 2 months, with them not on the same terms, never existed. Bayley grabs the briefcase, nails Charlotte in the head with it, nails Asuka with the briefcase, gives it to Io. Io gives the referee, and this time around, unlike Damian Priest, where Damian Priest is trying to cash in, and the referee's like, "You sure you want to cash in? You sure you want to cash? I want to fucking cash in. You sure you want?" And then they don't cash in. All Io Sky goes, "Cash in, cash in," and the referee takes it. Io Sky climbs the ropes, waits for the bell. As soon as the bell hits, she lands the moonsault. And before she even landed the moonsault, I should point this out, Io Sky grabbed the briefcase, nailed Bianca Belair in the leg that she supposedly hit the steps with, and then nailed Bianca in the head with it. Then she hit the moonsault, gets the win. Very, very cool moment. Dakota Kai enters the ring. She's still recovering from, I believe, knee surgery. She's out for the rest of the year. Damage control, group hug. Everybody's on all cylinders. 1 year ago, Damage Control debuted at SummerSlam. 1 year later, Io Sky is your WWE Women's Champion. What's your thoughts about what happened with Bianca and Io Sky becoming the Women's Champion?
First of all, the utter silence that was going on for majority of the match when you had three of the biggest stars in all of women's wrestling was perplexing to me. Because, okay, if you don't like Charlotte, got it, but you don't like Asuka or Bianca, Belair, Mrs. Smile, Babyface, everybody loves Bianca. Didn't see it last night. Certainly didn't see it when a heel pinned her for the title after her winning it for 5 minutes. So I was perplexed of what, you know, I guess that's just a thing now. And they're like, well, Kev, everybody who cashes in gets a pop, Alexa Bliss, Dolph Ziggler, everybody, you know, everybody's a baby face when they cash in. I guess that's a good philosophy, isn't it, DT? Everybody who cashes in always gets a pop.
The cash in is the baby face, not necessarily. Yeah. But you want to know something, though? You know, WWE's been planting this storyline seed that Bayley is always holding back Io Sky. Even the Grayson Waller effect the night before, Grayson Waller asks Io, come on, admit it, you know, let us know, give us the scoop, you're going to cash in. And before Io could say anything, Bayley grabs the mic, and Io's got this look on his face like, oh, come on, man, I want you to
No, I get what they're trying to do, but technically, again, much like LA Knight, she is still booked as a heel. What the crowd is reacting her to, she's not, you know, back in our day, DT, there were official turns, you know what I mean?
When remember Nikita Puerto Koloff
turned, you were Dusty, you know, and joined Dusty Rhodes to fill in for Magnum TA. Mm-hmm. He's a babyface. We get when Ron Garvin turned bad and knocked Dusty Rhodes out. Ron's a bad guy now. I get it. Io and LA Knight have not really, they just started kind of making fun of other heels. You know what I mean? So, but there's not been like, I don't know. I guess I'm waiting for, I'm old school. I'm waiting for some official thing here. But I was, but getting back to the three, you know, big time names in there. Again, I just indifference. You know, Charlotte, I know, thinks very highly of herself, and I do believe she is one of the greatest women wrestlers of all time. But I don't think that she's as over as she thinks she is, and I think that there is a lot of anti-Charlotte sentiment in the populace, and I don't think it's just a little section of people. You know, I think it's a lot of people, and I don't think they want to boo her, so what they show her is like this kind of indifference, and I always said that indifference... and everyone else has kind of picked it up too. It's not that I created this saying, but indifference is the worst thing that you can have in wrestling. Get a reaction, get booed, get cheered, get, you know, cursed out, but sit there kind of, where's the hot dog guy? That's the worst thing that you can have as a wrestler. Ask anybody, ask Cross, ask anybody. Just somewhat react, and then, you know, we feel we're accomplishing something. And then you try and figure out why the indifference. Now, Charlotte Flair shouldn't have indifference at this stage of her career. You know, there's other people who are fighting to get over, and the Emmas and the people like that who are trying to get the fans to you know, react to them. The Shotzis, the people like that. But Charlotte Flair's a made woman. You know what I'm saying, DT? When you're a made person, like you're a made man, you know, it'd be like John Cena begging for a reaction. It's weird to me when a top girl, and Asuka's another made woman, but where was the fan support, DT? It just was. I rewatched it. I told you, I rewatched this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there was some smattering of applause. Dude, until EO came out there, it was dead. It was dead until the cash in.
You know what I think it is? I don't want to compare it, you know, just kind of like a loose comparison. I kind of compare it to Brock from several years ago. Before Brock became this charismatic on TV, there was a point where Brock would disappear for a little while, and then he would come back and suddenly he would be heavyweight champion. And people would be like, wow, they keep going to this guy. Like when they feel that there's a low, like, let's just put it on Brock. And with Charlotte Flair, you know, she did take time off. She comes back and she's put right back in the mix. And I think deservingly so, because she is one of the top stars. I think the thing with Charlotte Flair is this. She's 37 years old. You know, she's going to be 38 years old. Well, actually, she'll be 38 next year, but she's 37 years old. I don't know how many more years Charlotte Flair is going to wrestle, but something tells me that she's not going to try to have the career of a dad and wrestle until she's 60. I think Charlotte Flair only has a handful of years left. So when they use her, they try to make it matter as much as possible. And I want to, and I think this kind of is also related to Bianca Belair. And I'm just going to say it. Anybody that's a longtime viewer, listener knows that Kevin and I are not racist in any way, shape, or form.
No.
And in no way, shape, or form does this have anything to do with skin color. But Bianca Belair just had a historic championship run. And now she doesn't have the championship. She loses it in 5 seconds, whatever it was. And right away, you get a decent, you know, group of people online that'll say, oh, yeah, look how they're treating the black wrestler again, the black woman wrestler. And I'm like, this is not a black thing or a white thing. It's just that Bianca just made history. We had the era of Bianca Belair for about 2 years. And the problem is that Bianca Belair, after 2 years, it feels like if she doesn't have the championship, they don't know what to do with her. Like, she's like, everything about her is, I got to go for the championship. I got to go for the championship. Like, they don't have any real hardcore feuds with an individual person. She's feuding with Asuka because she wants to become champion. She's not feuding with anybody because she's angry and pissed off. Even with the Charlotte stuff, Charlotte did not cost Bianca her win yesterday. So there's no reason for Bianca to be mad at Charlotte unless Charlotte mocks her. Good job, champ. You know, like, that's the only way I could see it. So, me personally, I think you got to tweak something with Bianca Belair. And I know this is an idea that everybody's talked about, and I'm going to throw it out there. You know, we don't have the Street Profits anymore. We have the Suit Profits. They had the Street Profits return last week in suits, beating the fuck out of the OC and the Brawling Brutes. I would have Bianca get a little edgy, acknowledge a little bit more, you know, put her with her husband. They're going to have the reality series on Peacock debuting soon. So her and her husband are going to be all over the TV doing press. Put her with her husband and Angelo Dawkins and Bobby Lashley. And you don't have to, like, emphasize their skin color. I know everybody talked about that with the Hurt Business, but put them as a faction and change Bianca a little bit. Stop with the focus only on Bianca, because Bianca comes out there, she's by herself. Yeah. You know, put her in a faction so some of that could be distorted. I think right now, you know, we hear Kairi Sane is going to be returning, and as I said earlier on the sit-down, there's not 100% guarantee that Kairi Sane is going to be put on SmackDown. You know, she's got the history with Asuka, but Kairi Sane may be needed a lot more on Raw right now than anything else. I just feel that, you know, Bianca Belair needs a good feud that doesn't have the title in the picture. And I think that's what's happened to the fans. The fans feel like for the last 2+ years, it's been pretty much Bianca. And before that, it was pretty much Charlotte. You know, so I just feel like the fans are kind of like tired of it. And Io Sky, you know, I think a fresh feud with Asuka, maybe Io, Kairi Sane, I don't know. You know, I don't get paid, you know, to go that far. But I think just the fans are, like you said, are a little bit indifferent with Charlotte Flair. We've seen it, been there, done it. It doesn't feel fresh anymore. You know, it doesn't feel like... It's just like the same rinse and repeat. And again, Charlotte Flair did not cost Bianca in any way yesterday. So why continue their feud?
Good point. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's a very good point. And again, I watched this, but you would, on paper, again, this match looks fantastic on paper, doesn't it? I mean, these three, for star, you're going to like one or the other. Maybe you got two favorites in there. Some of them are people's top five women, two out of three, maybe three out of three. So you got all, you know, three different styles. The one thing is, you know, it's not really a styles clash. And obviously, Charlotte has a big history with Asuka. I mean, they should be able to... You know, go at it like the way Flair went at it with Steamboat. You know what I mean? Her father back in the day. You know, he had dance partners that just worked great with him. And I always thought Asuka and Charlotte work well together. Bianca and Charlotte don't have that much of a history. Obviously, Bianca and Asuka have one from NXT. But that's when Asuka was dominant. And basically, you know, Bianca was just an upcomer getting beat all the time back then. And now she's a bigger star. I was disappointed with what I saw. I mean, I really was in the match. I watched it again. And DT, I got to be honest, I do get also, even being this old codger and being around for watching wrestling 43 years almost now, I get taken out of it too when there's no crowd. I'm not like one of those guys like, no, I'm focusing on the match. I'm not focusing on the crowd. I like the whole the whole picture. You know what I'm saying? The whole energy gets me out of my chair, just like anybody else. You know, I'll get up and go, yeah, whenever the crowd is excited, I turn the volume up on my TV, I get more into it. Being 55 has not changed a thing with me when it comes to my excitement and what generates reaction out of me at home, whether I'm watching by myself or I'm watching with a friend or two. And I couldn't get into this match. I posted on Twitter. It's kind of taken me out of it. Everyone's like, yeah, just focus on the match, Kev. Don't even worry about the crowd. I can't do that. The crowd is part of it. I can't separate it. I mean, listen, people say, well, didn't you guys, you, DT, Soup, your brother, have to focus on the wrestling during COVID because the crowd didn't factor in? Yeah, but I don't want to think about those days anymore.
Exactly.
I don't want to go back to COVID, non-crowds. I don't want to think of, I get your point in saying that, but let's not even go there. We're past that. We're back to full arenas now, guys.
Right. I'll say one last thing about this. If anybody's going to say, oh, have Bianca Belair feud with Io Sky, remember, last year we had a hell of a long feud with Damage Control and Bianca Belair, and Survivor Series last year was Team Bianca versus Team Damage Control. So, you know, there was a pretty extensive, long interaction last year, even early this year, with Bianca and Damage Control. So I don't immediately feel like, okay, that's the way to go with this. Now I'm wondering, you think there's any chance that Bayley does, I changed my mind. I was going to say maybe Bayley does similar to what Triple H did to Randy Orton. Remember when Randy won the championship and then Triple H did the thumbs down and then they attacked Randy? The problem with that is Dakota Kai is not able to get physical right now.
So that's true. Yeah, that's, yeah.
So, maybe Bayley attacks Io Sky. Maybe Bayley wants a shot at the championship. I don't think so, for the simple reason that, you know, all of what we saw yesterday, even behind the scenes with all members of the Damage Control, so emotional. We saw the footage of them returning in the gorilla position and getting a standing ovation and Bayley crying a little bit. I don't think you take that much real emotion and show it to the world, and then 5 days later, Bayley attacks her. I think it's way too soon for that.
I agree. Yeah, no, you're right about that. I totally agree. And again, I like that. And listen, I didn't even comment and say congratulations to Io Sky for winning the title. That was cool. I mean, that part of it was cool. You know, I know a lot of Bianca fans, you know, were not happy about that. Oh my God, you know, did Bianca have to, why didn't they, you know, let Charlotte win and then let them beat her? Because that's not the way they scripted it. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? And I don't think it was anything to dig at Bianca. I think Bianca's in good standing with the company. I just think it was something that needed to be done, and Bianca took the pinfall. Because a lot of people saw it as a waste of her beating Asuka just to be champion on record for 4 minutes or 5 minutes, whatever it was, and then to lose again. I mean, it's just, you know, shouldn't that be Asuka who got beat like that? I don't know, and I don't think it's racial, and I don't think it's pro this and anti that. No, DT, you had to see the dumb things written yesterday. I know you don't take too much stock in it, but I scanned, scoured Twitter, and it was pretty dumb. It was like, once again, you know, someone, I was like, no, Bianca was champion for a year. She's the longest reigning women's champion, and now she's the shortest reigning women's champion.
Well, you know what?
It's all part of the game, guys. It's not... Yeah, it just, you're taking the pin tonight. Happens to the best of them.
When Bianca retires and she becomes a Hall of Famer, if she's an 11-time heavyweight champ, it's better than saying she was a 10-time heavyweight champ.
Exactly. It's not a big deal. And, you know, it's funny. You could be upset for Bianca and happy for Io. You can lie. I saw people like, I like them both. I don't know how to feel. There's no way to, it's not real. You don't have to feel anyway. You could feel happy and know that Bianca is always in the title picture. She's still a top female. She's 30 years old. She's got a long career, and I think she's I personally think she's a WWE lifer, DT. Yeah. I think she's going to be around for a long time. She's a great representative for the company, and whether she's going to be a heel, babyface, Bianca and her husband are going to be here for a long time to come. You don't got to feel anything other than, oh, let's see what happens next. You know what you should feel? Enthusiastic. That's something interesting is going to happen next.
Well, as Michael Cole said yesterday night, from the world of stardom to the top of the world, we congratulate Io Sky on becoming the women's world champion.
Absolutely.
Did Alpha Academy and The Miz convince you to go out and drink Mike's hard lemonade?
No, I don't drink anyway. I mean, we sell that at the, yeah, at the bar. But, from what I understand, it's an acquired taste, very bitter. If you like that kind of sour kind of drink. But, I'm not a big lemonade guy anyway.
Yeah.
It's one of the push drinks today in the bar business too. It is very select. I don't know it to be very popular, but it's interesting that they're doing a thing for that. And listen, the Alpha Academy is popular. Talk about another little faction that we kind of forget about sometimes. The three of them are making a name for themselves, very popular. I think, I put more emphasis on Chad Gable.
Yes.
I think they haven't even scratched the surface with him yet. So Otis, come on, he's more of a, he's a right-hand man type of guy, but I don't think he's going to be in any title picture anytime soon. But I think Chad Gable can only gain more from this. You could call them a goofball faction or whatever, but that's fine. I mean, this is entertainment, isn't it? But Chad is great in the ring. I think there's more to come with him, too. And I like what they're doing with this girl. Listen, she was a deer in the headlights a year ago at this time. They didn't know what to do with her, the male, and then, with the male models thing. And she's probably having a ball, too, when she's on television every week. I like the three of them are working well together.
Absolutely agree. Fun little segment. Miz getting thrown into a cage.
Yeah, silly goofball. So, I mean, Miz is always the fall guy, Miz will do anything. That's what you got to love about him.
Yeah. Well, that leaves us with the main event. And I know we touched on it a little bit earlier. Roman Reigns retains the undisputed WWE Universal Championship, beating Jey Uso. Yeah. As we said earlier, no face paint. No tribal outfits, no props, no elders at ringside. This was a straight-up no DQ match. Early on, Roman Reigns takes the ulafala off of his head and shows it to Jey Uso and says, if you win, I will give you the ulafala, not the referee, not the wise man. I give it to you. And, we didn't get any props, any visuals, nothing to make this feel like it's like special tribal, no rituals, nothing. Mm-hmm. The match opens up and we get headlocks. And then the crowd, let's go Roman, Roman sucks. I, for the first 5 to 7 minutes of this match, I found myself going inside, getting a drink, feeling like it didn't even feel like there was heat. There was anger. Even when the crowd was chanting, we want tables, Jay grabs a table, but it doesn't get used until much later in the match. Mm-hmm. I think at this point, the buzz online was more because Corey Graves used the line that CM Punk used on The Rock years ago when CM Punk said, your arms aren't long enough to box with God. Because that's, because something with Roman Reigns. Meanwhile, people don't even realize that CM Punk did not originate that quote. If you go online and you do a Google search, you'll see articles going back to the 80s and the 90s. Just look up Perot's Obsession, Ross Perot. Look up the article from the Washington Post, and you'll actually see the quote, your arms are not long enough to box with God. It's not something originated in wrestling, and just because CM Punk said it doesn't mean anybody else can't say it. But anyway, we finally get the use of some weapons. We get a Singapore cane. We get a chair shot to Roman. Jay throws a bunch of chairs in the ring. And for me, up to this point, Paul Heyman was the star of this. When you hear Paul Heyman in the background, he loves you. He's your family. He's begging Jey Uso, please don't do this. He's your family. He loves you. And Roman then powerbombs Jay onto the chairs.
Oh, Jesus.
They brawl into the crowd. Roman Reigns' left arm is bleeding because Jey Uso hit a Samoan drop through a table. Jey Uso takes out this nice big leather strap. And I think after Jay hit him like the first and second time, Roman Reigns must have said to him, no more of the strap, please. Because they stopped with that fucking strap almost immediately, which was kind of funny. But then Solo Sikoa shows up. At this point, how are you feeling about this match? Does this feel more of like an episode of SmackDown than anything else? Like Solo Sikoa shows up, hits a spinning Solo through the table. and they go from brawling in the crowd to Solo carrying Jey Uso all the way back to ringside.
Yeah.
And Solo hits a spinning Solo in the ring. And at this point, we got Solo Sikoa and Roman Reigns double teaming Jey Uso. I mean, what's your thoughts about this so far?
Well, first of all, you know, some people complain about Reigns' entrance being too long or whatever, almost Undertaker-ish and slow, methodical. I like it. I always like the epic entrance. I still think it stands up. You know, obviously, I'm a big fan of Reigns, especially of this incarnation of his character. You know, we're never going to see anything like this again. I know it's coming to an end. I think in Mania, when Cody wins the title, I'm going to cry, literally. It's been a long haul. It's been tough being a Roman Reigns supporter over the years. I mean, the last 3 years, he's made it easy for me because most haters got on board with him or at least respect him now and see him as an epic figure in wrestling.
For me, for a long time, I couldn't stand him.
I mean, yeah, but, you know, this I got to say, but in saying that, this was my biggest disappointment of a match that he's been in since he's been the Tribal Chief and since this has been going on. This was my least favorite match. You know, if I go back to a couple of years ago when he fought Jey, you know, first time, you know, before he was the right-hand man and had to kind of whip Jey into shape, was great. And that was during COVID, if we recall, right?
Sure.
But this was just a disappointment. I just didn't like the way it went down. I mean, again, the crowd was in it and they were out of it. Some reaction and then kind of died down. People like, Kev, it was after midnight, for God's sakes, or it was after 11:30. It's a Saturday night in Detroit. It's like a Saturday night in New York City. I didn't get the memo that it's bedtime at 11:35. I mean, there's a lot of kids. I get that. I get that there's families there and they're tired and the father's trying to figure out where's the car and how they get out of here and beat the traffic. I get that. But this is also, you know, the main event. This is also a big hyped match. People kind of, I think you expect the unexpected with stuff like this on Saturday nights. Expect it to go late. Wouldn't you say, DT, that you wouldn't you, if you're going to something like this, say, this is probably going to run late? As an experienced wrestling fan, this is going to midnight or after midnight. So people kept telling me, Kev, there's families there. They're tired. I'm like, I get that, but it's not that late. It's not Christmas Eve and got to get the kids to bed for Santa. Kids are off from school. School's not back in session yet.
Right, and it's a Saturday, so they could sleep late the next day.
Yeah, I don't get, like, you know, again, I get it. And I don't even think people hit me up to argue with me, just argue with me. I think that they're saying this is a valid point, Kev. Don't you agree? Yeah, I do factor it in. Listen, I'm a middle-aged man. I get it. I might not be married, have kids, but I have nephews. I have 12-year-old nieces. I got it. I get it. And I was a kid once myself. You know, people forget that. Me and DT were actually, you know, children at one time. That we had curfews and we went to events with our parents and our parents were looking at their watches. But let's get out of here. Go to the Met game. My father wants to beat the traffic. I get it. But I think for something like SummerSlam, one of the big events of the year, you plan for this. You make almost a weekend out of it. But I will say, because they were saying, Kev, you know, there was like a fan thing earlier during the day. A lot of people were there since like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, I got it. You're tired. You're just a human being. I get tired too. I get it. But I always thought wrestling people dig deep in and they get into it. I was expecting for the crowd to just be a little bit more into it. And again, it started taking me out of it.
Yeah.
And even watching it again today, I'm like, look at that. When Roman Reigns punched him in the face, no reaction. Then Jey just kicked him, nothing. Then they reacted once Solo got involved. Then it got a little bit more reactive when he carried him, Fireman carried him to the ring and stuff. I'm like, okay, this is it for him. Now, what I didn't expect is what happened next. Right, they're double-teaming him. Jey gets out of that again, gets some comeuppance. And then the figure with the hood comes out. And that's, of course, you know, no big suspense here. It was Jimmy. For his fleeting second, DT, did you think it was somebody else?
No. Because the thing is, and just to set this up, Solo Fireman carries Jey back to the ring, hits a spinning Solo. Roman and Solo attempt to do their double team where Solo spikes Jey and Roman, I think, spears him. And Roman goes to spear Jey, moves out of the way, and he accidentally spears Solo. That you got to keep in the back of your mind because later on, Solo and Roman had a stare down. But I will say this.
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention that.
Before the Jimmy stuff, just to add something that you said about this, everything was dragging on too long. They could have easily chopped off 5 to 7 minutes of a lot of this very, very slow. It just dragged, and it dragged. But then after Roman inadvertently spears Solo, Jay gets laid out on the announcer's table. Solo goes to put Jay through the table, but Jay ends up splashing Solo through the table.
Right.
Then he spears Roman Reigns. So Jey Uso climbs the ropes and hits the splash, goes for the pin, but a masked man pulls him out of the ring. Right. You look at the size of the masked man, I think everybody pretty much thought it was Jimmy Uso, especially the scenario you and I talked about going back to the Money in the Bank. The person unmasks, and it's Jimmy Uso. Jimmy Uso then super kicks Jey Uso, and then Jey Uso gets speared through a table by Roman Reigns. 1, 2, 3.
Three. Mm-hmm.
The thing I think people need to think about more than anything is this. Jey Uso did not even acknowledge Roman. Jimmy Uso did not even acknowledge Paul Heyman. He did not acknowledge Roman Reigns. He did not acknowledge Solo Sikoa.
No.
Even when you look post-match, there's some fan footage, and Jimmy Uso just walks up the rampway by himself. Paul Heyman looks confused and startled. But as the crowd is chanting, "Fuck you, Jimmy," you know, you and I said this a little over a month ago, and we thought maybe as late as Survivor Series, at some point, there's going to be a fatal four-way with Roman versus Solo versus Jimmy versus Jay. And if people go back to the Money in the Bank predictions, you will hear us say this, that you have to do something to explain why Jimmy would fight Jay. And when we started having this match set up for SummerSlam, Roman said that Jay is more concerned about the championship than his own brother. So when people immediately think that Jimmy turned heel yesterday and Jimmy returned to the bloodline, I think people are either, you know, a little naive with this, or they could be right, but they're either right, they're naive, or they're intentionally ignoring the obvious, because we brought it up yesterday and almost nobody gave a shit about it. Jimmy on SmackDown, either this Friday or next Friday, is likely going to reveal that the reason why he did what he did with Jay is because Jay showed more concern about beating Roman for the championship than him in the hospital. So that's why Jimmy is upset with Jay. But I also believe that Jimmy Uso is still very, very pissed off at Roman Reigns and Solo for what they did to him. So Jimmy's his own guy. Jimmy is by himself. And that allows the friction with Jimmy and Jay. And then when Solo has had enough with Roman, because they've been teasing this for the last month, then what will end up happening is there'll be the fatal four-way, Roman versus Solo versus Jimmy versus Jay. Solo already has shown why he wants to beat up Jimmy and Jay. Jay has already shown why he wants to beat up Roman and Solo. Jimmy just showed why he wants to beat up Jay. The only thing missing right now is for Jimmy to show that he still wants to beat up Roman and Solo, and Jay is mad enough that he'll go up against Jimmy as well. What I hope doesn't happen is we get more of this elder stupid shit.
No.
That the elders suggest that all four of you fight. Oh, fuck the elders. Die already. You know what I mean? Like, get the fuck, get out of here. Bata wutaba. I just said that.
This took a turn.
How do you say die already in Samoan? I don't mean literally. I'm just saying as far as characters. You're like,
right.
Don't give a shit about the elders. Fuck you. Seriously. I don't want to hear no more elders. Kev, let me say this quick, just to be funny. If the elders were so upset that Jay and Roman have tribal combat, wouldn't it kind of like be obvious that the elders would be even angrier right now at Jimmy, and we should even get like tribal fucking assassination? Like, if the elders were upset to the point where Roman and Jay should go at it. If the elders are fucking silent right now after what Jimmy did, that makes everything look stupid. Like, why would the elders not propose anything now?
Well, here's the whole thing, DT. You know what? If you put the fucking elders on television then, so people can see something tangible and say, oh, they're talking about Afasika and Rikishi. Yeah. Or they're talking, you know what I'm saying? Put them on. Give people a visual. Everyone's, you know, even me, I'm going in my head like I know they're talking about Afasika and Rikishi. But to me, I'm going in my head and going almost like on Gilligan's Island where they're worshiping some tiki, like some sort of, you know, headstone or something. They're going there and they wait for like some voice like God to come down, because you're making people go in their minds and go like I assume that the elders are Sika, Afa, and maybe Rikishi, but are they? They never mention them by name. You know what I'm saying? Like who's the tribal elders? You know, come up with a, you know, bring back, dig up Curtis Iakea and bring him back. Oh, you know, God. Like remember the wizard when he had chalk all over him or whatever, yeah. He was wearing powder all over his fucking forehead. Bring back Curtis Iakea or something. I mean, yeah, I'm even at the point now, I'm old school, who show the elders, you know, make the crowd give a shit and say, oh, this is the elder group. At least put them on TV once, DT, and do an angle with them. What, too much to fly them in? Well, what's the fucking problem?
Bribe them. Some like fish or something, just like a nice meal, come down, they get a little TV time. I mean, come on, it's just like the elders.
The elder. What was it, the Kiss album, The Elder? Yeah. Remember that back in the day?
Yeah.
One of the worst Kiss albums of all time, by the way, The Elder, World Without Heroes.
How do the elders feel about what happened last night? Like, the elders are suddenly silent?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you're expecting, right, almost like in a comedic way, a voice from the sky, right, yeah. DT?
I'm telling you, it's like a bad Star Trek episode.
Just put it on the thing. There it is.
It's a bad Star Trek episode. That's what it feels like. God. I mean,
there's the elder.
Why not just say that, you know, this can't be resolved in a regular match. It's going to be no DQ. Why do we have to have this elders tribal con? And what was the nod? You know, like they originally like nodded to show respect, and Roman Reigns holds Solo Sikoa back from hitting Jay, but then at the SummerSlam, it's okay for Solo to do what he did. I mean, it just makes the whole tribe. Is the tribal combat to be like, let's just lie to everybody? You know, let's just propose.
They could do this a lot better. They're just not. I don't know if they're not. And it's funny because they put everything into this bloodline thing and they booked it right most of the way. And now you're seeing a little bit of the foundation crumbling or the creative not hitting on the mark like they were with this. This was, even last night, Jimmy coming out, and someone was mentioned the loud fuck you, Jimmy chants. Yeah, it was very audible on TV. I heard it again today. They didn't censor it out. But still, I think now people have a day, as we talked about, that's why it was good for us to do this podcast the next day at night. We can kind of rethink it, maybe rewatch it, or even see some breaking news bits out of it that we can discuss, that we have the advantage over people who just rushed to do it last night after the pay-per-view was over. But with that said, again, rewatching it earlier today, I liked other things that I saw earlier on in the pay-per-view that I might have downgraded in some of my comments on Twitter, but this, and being the big Roman Reigns mark that I am, notably, I just thought that this was the weakest out of all the battles that the bloodline has been in individually or as a team. I just didn't really like the way this finished up, DT, and I think the crowd went home disappointed. I think the crowd went home indifferent. Yeah. You know, like, oh, more bloodline. Jimmy's turn now, so now what's going to... So now is it a fatal four-way with the four of them, or there's Solo talk next week and challenge Roman Reigns? Clearly, Jimmy versus Jay at Payback. I'm not sure where they go from here. I don't know if Roman detours, DT, and maybe starts up with... a feud with AJ Styles or with Sheamus.
It's possible.
And they just let the two brothers go at it, and now the focus is on those two.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to... Listen, I want to add this too. I think this is very, very important. The IWC is now suddenly pushing Jimmy Uso versus Jey Uso WrestleMania 40, just like they were pushing hardcore for LA Knight to win the Money in the Bank briefcase. Where this originates is apparently there was an interview with, I think, Ariel Helwani with the Usos, and they said that their dream match is to them to face each other at a WrestleMania. Let me just say this with all due respect to everyone out there. A lot of future WWE Hall of Famers have fantasized many WrestleMania matches that they will never, ever get. So just because the Usos fantasize WrestleMania doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a WrestleMania. It could be a payback. It could be, you know, in India. So to immediately think that they should fight at WrestleMania 40, you have to take a step back and use logic, which a lot of people forgot to do with LA Knight in that briefcase. When everybody for 7 months pushed that LA Knight should win the briefcase, you know, we kept saying, you said it, I said it, we kept saying all along, like, yeah, he wins the briefcase, and then what? He's not a Raw wrestler, so he ain't going to keep fucking with Seth Rollins. He certainly is not going to start cutting promos on Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is in the Bloodline feud right now. So LA Knight would have been walking around with a fucking briefcase challenging nobody. Maybe he challenges Austin Theory at the most. So winning the briefcase is all fun, gushy moment. But then you realize LA Knight ain't going to fucking mingle with Roman Reigns or Seth Rollins right now. So the briefcase meant nothing for LA Knight. But in the case of Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso, you have to prolong this feud from now until WrestleMania, which is 8 months away. The road to WrestleMania is 4 to 5 months away, but you're talking 7, 8 months away. And I brought this up before, and I'll say it here. You know, with all due respect, they've been pushing Jey Uso as main event Jey Uso. They have not been pushing Jimmy Uso the same way. It's going to take them a long time to try to get Jimmy Uso on the level of Jey Uso as far as the fans' perception. Right. And if you wait 7, 8 months for them to fight each other, that could hurt both guys. And as time goes by, if Jimmy Uso isn't winning high-profile matches, Jimmy Uso turns into the Marty Jannetty of that team.
Yeah, it's true. You're right.
You're pushing Jey Uso does look like a main eventer. He's 200. I think he's like 200. Somebody said he was 220 pounds. I was kind of shocked.
Yeah, he might be 2 1/4. Yeah, he might be.
He's put on some bulk, but you know, just because they fantasize that match, I think it's kind of like stupid for people to be pushing this, oh, WWE, you got to book this for WrestleMania 40. No, you don't, because storyline-wise, what the fuck are you going to do for 8 months? So, you know, we'll see what happens. But you know they're going to milk it for either this Friday or next Friday. Jimmy's got to give an explanation, and then they're going to milk it. Is Jimmy returning to the Bloodline? And then they're going to milk it. And then Jimmy doesn't turn to the Bloodline. Jimmy's his own guy. And then that's going to have to somehow lead to Solo and Roman. And, yeah, this could be going on. Kev, let's end this with this.
Sure.
What's your thought of Paul Heyman in the media scrum yesterday saying that the Bloodline story is only in the bottom of the third inning?
Oh, God, yeah, that's... I'm not sure what that even means.
Yeah, I think
the third inning?
We got a long way to go still. And as much as I love this storyline, if we're only in the bottom of the third inning, I'm not sure I feel about this with Roman having a stranglehold on the championships.
I think everyone here, even in the chat, everyone who's going to listen to this on the download and the general public, have all set their mind and can accept, I'm not speaking for everybody, but I would say, you know, good 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, accept that, this is going to WrestleMania. Cody's the guy. How this plays out and Rumble and everything, there'll be a couple of different ways to go around the block with this. But it all leads to the road to Mania. If you didn't watch the Cody doc, watch it. He is the chosen one, and deservedly so. And we talked about earlier endorsement from the gatekeeper, Brock Lesnar, and I say that in a good way, that it has to get to that. And we are going into the second week of August this week. So we got, August, September, October, November, December, January, February. We have about 7 to 8 months to go. And then, believe me, it goes by really fast, DT, because I remember very clearly, it seems like yesterday, it was January. So again, it's not that long to go. People accepted that Reigns is at least, at the very least, going to be champion at Mania and drop it at Mania to Cody. But what they do in the interim and who feuds, obviously it's going to be Jay and his brother going at it. I think at Payback they go at it. They're not taking that to WrestleMania.
No, I think
they're
going to
settle it in one match, I think, at Payback.
Yeah, I think it's next 2-3 months at the most.
Yeah, and Reigns can Reigns can feud with AJ. He can feud with maybe a returning Randy Orton. Definitely with Sheamus after you're seeing these seeds planted with Sheamus. And again, you know, it's one pay per view bi-monthly, and you go and we're there. We're at the Royal Rumble before you snap a finger. We're in the Christmas already. So I don't see it as this draining long process. But I agree with you, and even being a big Reigns guy. If Reigns retains at WrestleMania and beats Cody, and I don't even know what I'm going to... I mean, I'm going to be at the point where I'd throw up the white flag. So I just got my mindset that Reigns is champion until WrestleMania. And what goes on, I'll just enjoy the ride or I won't enjoy it. Just like I said, I didn't really enjoy this match. I always enjoy Reigns' stuff. This was my least favorite thing from him in the year of 2023 that he's been involved with on pay-per-views. But it wasn't so terrible that now I'm off the train and now I'm disgruntled. No, I just, you know, not everything can be his. Listen, me and you, DT, have had to put up with the fucking Mets. I could take the Roman Reigns as I'm dropping the bucket. I'm disappointed every day. I mean, talk about giving up, you know, and just accepting loss and mediocrity. Bloodline disappointed me one time in the last bunch of pay-per-views. All right, I'll accept it. No big deal. Let's hope for a banger, no pun intended, the next Payback, where if Reigns is on it or is not, but between the Usos, let's hope for better matches from them, or something more interesting to the storyline other than just my brother, you know, is taking up the star. I should have been the star. We've seen this bullshit done before. But it will be interesting to see Jay and Jimmy battle. I don't know. I don't really got a dog in that fight, DT. If you ask me who I want to see come out victorious, I don't really care, to be honest with you. Either guy. I like both guys, but they're not like my top favorites.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give SummerSlam?
7. I'll give it a 7. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was better. Listen, yesterday, if you asked me, DT, I might have given it a 6. I mean, I rewatched it again in peace with no interruptions. And I'll even go 7.5. I'll go 7.5 to be as accurate as I can. 7.5 out of 10.
Okay. I'll give it a 7.5 also. I just feel there was a lot of disappointment as far as what Tribal Combat actually was supposed to be.
Yeah, it was disappointing. Yeah.
Yeah, it should have been more spectacle. I think if it was more spectacle, I think it would have kind of covered up a little bit of the repetitive, you know, this is very repetitive of what we're seeing with Roman, with Solo, no matter who the opponent is. And the Jimmy, you know, swerve is interesting. I think a lot of people expected it storyline-wise, and especially if this Fatal 4-Way goes down that we are sticking with, and I think we're going to be right about that. You know, obviously there's got to be a reason for Jimmy and Jay want to fight each other. And Jimmy has the perfect, easiest excuse for it. Oos, I'm in the hospital and all you're talking about is main eventing and winning championships. And, right. And it makes sense. It makes sense. And Roman actually said that in a promo not too long ago. So, you know, Roman could have some fun with that as well, but I want to see the progression of the fallout with Solo and Roman. Once that happens, then I think we start factoring in Cody. I think we start factoring, because you saw the documentary. I finally got to see it. And one thing that we learned from it, the only way Cody finishes the story is if he wins the WWE Championship.
Oh, yeah. It's a must. There's no excuses. There's no side notes. There's no side track. It's at WrestleMania, the story ends and a new chapter begins. And, you know, there's a lot that can happen from there. It's exciting. To me, it's exciting to think about Cody. As much as I'm a big Roman Reigns fan, I've done a 180 on Cody in the last couple of years. Not because he left AEW. That's part of it. But I also am a big, and so are you, big Dusty Rhodes fan. I always were. And I always would feel weird about not supporting the kids. Like, you know, like just, you know, from all the families in wrestling. I mean, you know, I didn't necessarily was a fan of the father, but I liked the majority of the family. Like the Von Erichs, wasn't a Fritz guy, but I was a fan of all the boys. You know, I wasn't a big Bullet Bob guy, but I was a big fan of his sons, all the Armstrong guys. You know, same thing, Brad, Stu. I have certain hearts I like better than others. But, you know, I want to see good things happen to Cody. I think he's generally a good guy. I know, and the family, the mom, the sister, they're good people. You know, it's like they're not insufferable. And listen, AEW painted him a certain way. Even in that television show with Brandy, you saw a little entitlement there, a little bratty behavior. But I don't think he's that guy. I think that was more showy. And I think he's more comfortable in his real self in WWE. Documentary only made me like him more. And again, he's a Rhodes, man. I want to see him do well because, you know, I do definitely feel people think it's too much with the Dusty stuff. But I think it's perfectly fine. And I think Dusty would be totally in support of this. I don't think they're overusing the Dusty roast thing. Cody's over already, DT. Yeah. You know what I mean? He doesn't need Dusty. He's over already.
You know what? He was on the Today Show. And yeah. If any of you out there, the footage is online. If you watch his appearance on the Today Show, not only does he give the presence of a main eventer, he gives a presence of a huge top class ambassador for WWE.
Oh yeah, I saw a clip of that, and that's again, I'm sold. That's what I mean. He might have to win some other of you guys over, but to me, I'm sold on it. I wasn't the biggest AJ fan. I spent half my DTKC time making fun of AJ Styles and Impact because I always thought, big fish, small pond, too afraid to go to WWE, you know, no balls. And then comes to WWE and kills it and is, you know, even now it's almost like surreal to see him now in a feud with Cross. You know, and I did a 180 and I said I was wrong about AJ Styles and I was wrong about Cody. He is that guy, and he's proven it to me. And the documentary just signed, sealed, and delivered it for me, DT. So I'm looking forward to it. You know what I mean?
And one other thing I'll say, too, another recommendation if people want to check it out, Entertainment Tonight on Friday, I watched the piece. They interviewed Bianca Belair and Montez Ford because of their upcoming reality show. You watch that. Entertainment Tonight put them over like full-blown celebrities, class acts. So it's all about, you know, the presentation outside of the wrestling world. They're coming off more than just pro wrestlers. And when you see things like that, you understand why some people are in the position they're in. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see where everything goes from here. But overall, a very fun SummerSlam, and there's going to be a lot to be continued from here, and you know, we will talk about it as it happens.
Cool.
Kev, much love. Thank you for coming.
Thanks,
on.
Man. I know you did like a double shot today.
I did the sit down before we went live. You know, my ass hurts a little bit, but I typed most of the synopsis early on, so you know, at least I could get to go to bed at a reasonable hour tonight. But
all right, man. I hope you and your ass feel better.
Yeah,
and,
thank you very
thanks,
much.
Thanks, everybody. Yeah, it was a great show. I knew we put on another banger. We did it again, and it was good to be back with you for SummerSlam. It's been a while, man. So this was This was fun.
I will definitely talk to you later in the week.
All right, sounds good. All right, good night,
everybody. Peace. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoyed this SummerSlam recap, review, aftermath. You know, obviously, you know, SummerSlam delivered in many ways, and there's a lot of to be continued in this. And it's going to be fun to look back at our discussion and to see where this goes with Roman, where it goes with Jimmy, Drew McIntyre, what's next for LA Knight. Ronda Rousey, I'm going to go against everybody online and say you will see Ronda Rousey on WWE television again in the very near future. It may not be for long, but I don't think we've seen the last of Ronda Rousey. Who's going to be Gunther's next feud? That should be something interesting to look forward to. What happens with Cody Rhodes? Who feuds with Cody Rhodes next? Do we get some public additional acknowledgement from Brock Lesnar? Will we get Logan Paul Ricochet 2? Kairi Sane, she's got a press conference, Japanese time, in about 4 to 5 hours from this recording. So by Monday's show, we should know what the deal is with Kairi Sane. Apparently, she is on her way back to the WWE. Maybe Asuka dropping the belt was to reform the Kabuki Warriors. There are so many things that comes out of SummerSlam, which is going to be really interesting to discuss as we go along. So I hope you enjoyed this. You're more than welcome to send some feedback. Let us know what you thought about SummerSlam, if we said anything that you agreed, disagreed upon. And we'll see what happens on the upcoming shows. One quick plug for those that may be interested. This Friday, August 11th, we're going to be bringing back the watch party for SmackDown. I'm bringing it back right now for one night only. And the turnout is going to depend if we keep them going next week and beyond. So, you know, the cool thing about the watch parties, it's not like a YouTube watch along where you click on the show and you just watch the host talking about what's on live on TV or on premium live event. Here, you actually watch SmackDown. So if you join me Friday, playback.tv/DonTonyShow, you could watch SmackDown with yours truly. I will be hosting. I will be mingling with everybody on that's going to be hanging out. And we'll see what the turnout is. Especially with what happened with Jimmy Uso, should be really interesting to see what happens on SmackDown. So, you know, maybe you could join me and we'll see what the turnout looks like. And if we have a nice turnout, then we'll continue it next week, either with another SmackDown or NXT or maybe both. And Judgment Day. We got to think, remember, Judgment Day, there's going to be a lot of storyline advancement there. Seth Rollins, it's going to be really, really interesting. So, you know what I just realized coming out of SummerSlam, maybe with the exception of Ronda Rousey, everybody comes out of SummerSlam with, you know, like a to be continued. Like, what's next for Shayna? And I know what some people are going to say, that to be continued could factor in on almost any premium live event or pay-per-view. But everything here has people really intrigued. I'd like to see Shayna Baszler and Rhea Ripley go at it. I don't think anybody would have a problem with that. So everybody has a nice unknown. And I think the ratings, the crowd attendance, and the buzz reflects that. So everyone, much love as always. I am out of here, and I thank you very much for joining us for your WWE SummerSlam 2023 recap and review. Have a good night, everybody. Be well.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. 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 Yeah.